when you imagine retirement, a lot of cliches might pop into your head. Moving to that warm climate, Florida, Arizona, pursuing the hobbies, spending time with family, joining elderly communities for water aerobics and bingo.
But when many Americans sit down and actually do the math and check out their savings and pensions accounts, that kind of leisure doesn't jibe with reality. As pensions disappear, wages stagnate, and houses are foreclosed, a growing group of people are finding that they need to work through their 60s and 70s to make ends meet.
One solution older people are turning to is living in RVs and traveling the country as migrant laborers in campgrounds, produce fields, and Amazon warehouses.
Writer Jessica Bruder recently spent time with these elderly migrant communities and wrote the article The End of Retirement, which appears in this month's issue of Harper's Magazine. Jessica, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Jessica, do you have a sense about just how many older Americans are starting to need to work into their 60s and 70s and beyond?
It's very hard to say. Nobody is keeping direct tabs on this population, but one thing I did notice is that when Amazon started a program for these workers called Camperforce back in 2008, it was just a handful of folks. And according to what one recruiter told me, the headcount is now at 2,000. So if that growth indicates anything, it's definitely that there's interest and growing interest in this type of work.
Well, your piece shines a light on a group of Americans that you say, you bluntly call them geriatric migrant workers. Who are these people?
A lot of these people got whacked by the recession. A lot of these people don't have enough in Social Security to retire on comfortably. A lot of, for more than half of Americans 65 and over right now, Social Security is the largest single source of income, but it was never meant to be enough for people to retire on. That's not what the program was designed to accomplish. So you have a lot of people who thought they'd planned enough and then lost their investments or really believed the gospel that the housing market always goes up and found that disproved. So a lot of people in a lot of different circumstances.
So there is this culture that's springing up of people who by necessity, senior citizens, are living in RVs and going where the jobs are. And one of these people that you meet is a woman named Linda May, I think her name is. Tell us about her. Who is she?
Sure. Linda just turned, oh gosh, she was 64. I believe she just turned 65. I met Linda after she'd been working at Amazon. Basically, Linda was living in a trailer in New River, Arizona, and working as a cashier for Home Depot. She realized that when she did get Social Security, it was only going to be $499 a month, that she didn't have enough to retire on, that all the many jobs she'd worked in her life, from cocktail waitress to insurance executive to various construction jobs, had never brought anything like a pension, any kind of lasting security, and she didn't have enough socked away. So basically she went online and started reading and learned about people living in vehicles, some of them for as little as $500 a month on that low a budget. And she said, well, you know, if they can do it, I can do it. Saved up, bought an RV that had the price had been reduced because it had collided with a telephone pole, and she set out on the road and started getting some of these work camping jobs, which are designed for RVers who travel from place to place.
And she's far from alone. There's a growing number of people, as you said, who are doing this sort of RV migrant work. What kinds of jobs do they do?
They do all sorts of jobs. So there's a pretty common job called camp hosting where it's, you know, you're scrubbing toilets, you're taking admission fees. Those are, you know, you can find those jobs from coast to coast. There are people who set out and haul around and cut the Christmas trees that you see for sale in parking lots around the Christmas holiday. There are people who sell pumpkins and fireworks depending on the season. There are people who pick fruit. There are people who work for Amazon in the warehouses in that program, which is growing. And there are people who work the annual sugar beet harvest in the Red River Valley. That's another big work camping job. They hire hundreds of RVers.
How physically demanding is this kind of work?
Depends on the job. And even the lighter jobs can be taxing. I just learned yesterday that Linda May broke a rib trying to fix a dumpster out in the campgrounds where she's working in Mammoth Lakes. You know, these jobs can be rough. I mean, they are physical, and even jobs that look light can lead to things like that. The Amazon job is really physically intense. Everybody I talked to who had this job and was living in an RV in the RV park seemed to have the bottles of ibuprofen, the tubs for soaking sore feet with Epsom salts. I did talk to people who were injured on the job within days of my talking to them and had to quit. I did meet people, including Linda, who were still wearing, you know, Linda was wearing a brace on her wrist because of using the UPC scanner too much in the warehouse. So they're not easy jobs.
There's a telling moment in your piece when you're talking with one of Amazon's Camper Force representatives, and he urges you to come early in the season because people aren't so exhausted then. So it sort of tells you about how this can be demanding on a body that's older, that maybe isn't meant for this kind of labor anymore.
Well, no, absolutely. And I would email, you know, I kept in touch. I went in October. That was my first visit with work campers. And they were still gearing up for peak season right before the Christmas holiday, and a lot of people were just kind of getting settled. But I would get emails from people I'd met just saying, okay, we're all kind of zombies now. It's cold out. We're working long shifts. A lot of the people I met were working the overnight shift, which gets you maybe a quarter or 50 cents more per hour, but, you know, has you working through the night. And by the end of it, it just, you know, it accumulates and there's a bit of a toll on the body and people were pretty wiped out.
Why does Amazon and other companies like them, why are they so interested in recruiting these senior migrant workers?
That was a big question for me at first, too. It seems really counterintuitive. Why would you want older people to do jobs that seem that they'd be better suited to 20-somethings, these kind of limber, light, stronger, younger people? But in truth, it's funny, I talked to one woman in the laundromat of the Desert Rose RV Park, and she told me, thank goodness the millennials are so lazy or never get a job. But, you know, she was joking. But in all truth, what the recruiters do say again and again is that this is a generation with a serious work ethic. This is a generation that shows up. They keep doing it. They're proud of what they do. And that there's just a serious ethic of the meaning of work and doing what you've committed to do.
So typically, what is a senior migrant worker's life like in this RV? What might they go through in a year?
All sorts of stuff. I mean, many people seem to follow the jobs. I met people who had done both the beet harvest and Amazon. So some people would go straight for the beets. They might be working in Montana to a RV park in Fernley, Nevada, where they're working at an Amazon warehouse, to Quartzsite, Arizona, where many people go in the winter to because they can go financially dormant. It's very inexpensive to camp there. You're on federal land. In some places it's free, depending on what kind of facilities you need, and most of them are boondocking, which is dry camping. So for power, they might be using solar or a generator, but you've got no hookups for power, no hookups for water, and there's an incredible community that gathers there each year and of RVers, and I got to spend some time with them in January, which was a really eye-opening experience.
Why was that? What happened in January?
Well, in January, I heard that was when the peak time for Quartzsite was. So everybody I met, it seemed, said, well, we see you in Quartzsite. Well, we see you in Quartzsite, when I was doing those early interviews at Amazon. And I said, what's Quartzsite? And one guy told me it was Burning Man for geezers. And somebody else told me that that's where all the recruiters go for all these work camping jobs. So I said, oh, I've got to get out there. And I took my tent, which made them all think I was crazy, but I tented in the desert among them for about 3 weeks and just learned a lot about how people come together in really rough times. There was one group of people that I was led to by one of the Amazon work campers, and they were all in a group called the Rubber Tramp Rendezvous. They get together annually and share all sorts of skills. They've got seminars on stealth parking and installing solar panels and where to go for cheap dental care in Los Algodones, Mexico, and how to cook with fire, patch a tire, all sorts of stuff. And they camp together and share these lessons and stories. And it's a pretty incredibly strong and creative community.
You're getting at one aspect of here that's pretty interesting. You're describing an incredibly harsh life for these senior citizens. They're itinerant. They have to go where the jobs are. They don't really have enough money to live what we would think of as a life of leisure in their golden years. And yet, they seem happy. At least some of the people you spend time with describe having joy and freedom. Why is that?
Well, it's interesting. It makes me think of, there's a writer I admire by the name of Rebecca Solnit, who wrote a book called A Paradise Built in Hell, The Extraordinary Communities That Rise from Disaster. Just because the economy is hell and just because a lot of bad things are going on doesn't mean that people aren't resilient and incredible. I would hate to think that people might read the story and say, oh, everybody's doing fine. We don't need to worry about the economy. Look, they're camping. I think might be my biggest fear, because we do have some tremendous work to do in ensuring that people in their older years have more of a choice about what they do and how they do it, and a bit of comfort to do it with. But the upside is, yeah, that people in tough times do come together and do amazing things. But again, I don't think we want to rest on that in terms of creating a society where people do have a little bit more wiggle room as they age.
Well, what do you think this says about the economy, that there is this huge senior citizen workforce that travels the country in RVs?
I think it's a little terrifying. I mean, it's great when it's working, but, you know, bodies don't last forever. RVs sure don't. So when people are out there and they can do it, I mean, it's hard, but they're okay. But by the same token, a lot of them are in pain. I mean, the Amazon jobs aren't easy. A lot of people want to put a good face on it. So the challenge is, how do you, if somebody says, I'm doing this, I've found freedom, but you realize that the finances are difficult, I mean, how do you balance that stuff? So what it says about the economy is that our plan for retirement finance is pretty much broken. I look back to the New Deal and the start of Social Security and the whole idea that we were going to have what economists called a three-legged stool of retirement finance. One leg was Social Security. One leg was investments and whatever savings you had. We saw a lot of that wiped out for many people by the Great Recession. And, you know, if you think about home equity and all that. And the third was a pension. Now, pensions have gradually been supplanted by 401ks, and that's been a really big gamble, and I think the workers have mostly lost out. So you've got a three-legged stool that's pretty much down to one leg.
We're speaking right now with writer Jessica Bruder about the challenges that older Americans face when it comes to retirement and the jobs that some are taking in an attempt to make ends meet.
And we'd like to hear from you. Are you at retirement age, or what you thought was going to be retirement age, but you're still working? What kind of jobs are you doing? Was it a choice or a financial necessity? If you're looking ahead to possible retirement, do you think you'll be able to stop working? At what age? What plans have you made? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're back with writer Jessica Bruder talking about the challenges that older Americans face when it comes to retirement. She got to know the growing group of geriatric migrant laborers and what their lives say about the idea of retirement in America today.
And we'd like to hear from you. You can call now at 800-642-1234. Are you working well past what you thought was retirement age? What kind of work are you doing? Are you or someone you know part of that migrant force of older workers? And more generally, is our retirement system in this country broken? What would it take to fix it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you could post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And I want to go to our first caller now. George is joining us in Chicago, Illinois. Hi, George.
Hi.
What do you think about retirement today?
Well, what we're talking about is the historical pattern where defined benefit pension plans have been stolen from most of the people who worked in corporations over the past 30 years. They were replaced by 401ks, which were then basically a casino or lottery system that wiped out first in the 2000 downturn of the stock market and then in the 2008 crash. A lot of these people have seen their retirements stolen from them.
And do you think this will turn around? Do you expect to see Americans returning to private pensions funded by employers and away from the 401ks?
Only when Americans organize in unions and start fighting for the rights of working people against people like Jeff Bezos and the Amazon plutocrats who are plundering the entire society.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, George. And Jessica, what do you think about that? George laying the blame at the feet of corporations and turning toward 401ks?
I have to say, I agree with George that 401ks have been a failed experiment. I believe that they were marketed to the American public starting in the 80s as these instruments of financial liberation. You can choose what to do with your money. But at the same time, we were shifting things from defined benefit, as in you, the worker, you know what you're going to get at the end, the employer is putting the money in, the employer is taking any associated risks, to defined contribution, which means you, the employee, are putting the money in and choosing the risks and really going to that casino. So I have to say, I might not put it in exactly the same words, but I agree with George that 401ks have not been a good thing for the worker at all. And part of the problem right now is the whole system of retirement finance was meant to work with pensions rather than 401ks. So we've got this gaping hole.
When you talk to the people who are working in the senior citizen migrant labor forces in their RVs, did you get the sense that they had any sort of political cohesion? Did they blame anyone in particular for the lives they were living?
Mostly no. I mean, I met one guy who was reading a book about the robbing of Social Security or some such. But frankly, I mean, mostly people are trying to get through the day and to be positive about it, because that's what makes it all right to get up and move crates the next morning, even if your arms hurt. So honestly, no, I see a lot of people who aren't angry and aren't organized and really feel that, okay, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to make the best of it. And if I can, I'm going to make it an adventure and I'm going to live day to day. But no, most people are not angry.
Okay, we're going to go next to Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Well, good afternoon. I started picking apples in about a week and a half at Turkey Ridge Orchard at Gay's Mills. I'm 75, so I'm still climbing trees. I can always use the money, but it's some extra money, and it's just good physical exercise, and I enjoy getting out and doing it.
So, Eugene, you're doing it, sounds like, because it's pocket money and exercise. This is not something that you feel you have to do to survive. Is that right?
That's right. That generally speaking, yeah. I mean, I use the money as far as that's concerned.
All right.
But it is good. It is good. Please believe me. It puts you in shape real quick.
All right. Thank you, Eugene. Jessica, what about that? People who choose to work later in life.
Sure, but also need the money. I mean, it also comes down to what's choice. Do you know what I mean? If you're spending it and it's part of your core budget, but you choose to do it. I mean, there are always, it gets a little tricky semantically. I mean, there are people who work in the Amazon warehouses who joke and say, yeah, it's my fitness program, it's my cat food weightlifting regimen. But it's hard to say. And if I know there are people who are choosing to do it, and I think it's great as long as people have choice. And the question is, what is choice in this case? If it's money that you're using that's part of that core budget, you could probably choose to do other things, but it's a hard way to go when you're a bit older.
All right. Well, thank you for that call, Eugene. And we're going to go next to Sharon in Wautoma. Hey there, Sharon.
Hi there. I used to live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I retired up here. But I worked for the phone company, which was a decent wage. And I took the lump sum buyout because they were cutting out the pension plan, putting my money and not being aggressive in the market, because you couldn't be. I was just kind of a bit over medium average, you know, investing. I still lost $100,000, which is a big hit. You know, and then maybe if we could get the 11%, that's the 1% plus the 10% of the top wage earners, or live on food stamps or minimum wage for at least 1 month total. Maybe then they would pay us a decent wage so we can put money aside to try and get money for retirement, because nobody is going to have money for retirement. I was lucky.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. $100,000 is a lot of money to lose. Is that going to affect what kind of retirement you're going to have, or if you're able to retire? Sharon, are you with us?
Tight. It's tight.
It's tight.
Now, I don't go out to eat or nothing. I make food at home.
All right.
Now, I buy everything on sale.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I appreciate it, and good luck to you, Sharon. Jessica, what does Sharon's story say to you?
I think Sharon raises a good point. We've got a culture right now where CEOs are making hundreds of times the average wages of the rank-and-file workers. When it comes down to subsistence living, it's embarrassing. It's nationally embarrassing that we should be in this situation. I really think you see these struggles coming to the surface now, too, with the market basket fight, with all the workers over there saying, we want a CEO who can pay a fair wage. And I think we're just going to see more and more of it because people are realizing they've gotten a raw deal.
Have we ever seen a situation like this culturally before where we have a what seems to be a generation of downwardly mobile elderly Americans who work jobs like these, temp jobs?
This is really the first time. It's funny, I was interviewing Monique Morrissey. She's at the Economic Policy Institute in D.C., and she told me that basically right now we've got, this is the first ever reversal in retirement security in modern U.S. history, which means to say that before, each generation could assume that the following generation would be doing better, that the living standard was going up, that there would be more security in retirement, less worry, and we're seeing that start to flip for the first time in modern history, and that is frightening.
Let's see if we can get to one more quick call. Erin in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi there. I wanted to make a comment on I'm a nurse in the Eau Claire area, and the number of patients I see at the retirement age that go from having a sense of purpose and working every day of their life to retiring and going through stages of depression and anxiety. And, you know, I guess my comment is I wish there were more of a step down to the retirement process where workers could go, you know, maybe 75% and down to 50% and then down to, you know, working a couple days a week. So they kind of ease into retirement.
All right, gotcha. I just want to make sure that we get time with Jessica. Jessica, is that part of it? Do people need more of a ramping down? We've got about 30 seconds.
I think a lot of people are enthusiastic about keeping busy, but what I'd like to see is for people just to have some more options about how they do that.
Is retirement as we know it over?
It's changing pretty quickly. Retirement as we knew it is over. I'd argue that part is over already.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Jessica Bruder. Her article, The End of Retirement, appears in this month's issue of Harper's Magazine.